Good afternoon. The meeting will come to order. The clerk will note the roll. There is a quorum. If anyone has any testimony they'd like to give before the committee, I would instruct you to contact our page, Eric Anderson, who's standing up over there with the purple tie. Members, I'm going to add one very quick item to the agenda. That is House File 2629, which this committee passed out yesterday. After we had passed it, I held it because I found out we had a one-word technical amendment correction that we needed to make. And so with that, members, I'm going to move that we reconsider the vote by which House File 2629 passed and was referred to the General Register as amended. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Members, if you look in your packet, there is the A6 amendment, which is an amendment to the A5 amendment that was adopted. We don't have an engrossment of the bill yet. So what I'm going to do is move the A6 amendment to the A5 language that was amended on to House File 2629, which simply is the words on page 1, line 9 of the amendment, delete technology enterprise, insert general. It's just a technical correction on which fund the money is coming from. Any questions to the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of the A6 amendment to the A5 language, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Members, the bill is before us as amended. Any discussion? All in favor of House File 2629 as amended, being recommended to pass and referred to the General Register, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The bill is passed. Members, the other item we have today is the tax bill. Representative Abrams moves that House File 2540 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. Representative Abrams.
Mr. Chairman, I'd also like to move the A18 amendment, which is the author's amendment in members' packets.
Representative Abrams moves the A18 amendment.
Let me go through it very briefly for the tax committee members. The language on page 1 and 2 deal with that IRA issue that was brought to our attention from the gentleman in Northfield. On page 3, there is some language in lieu payments. That's the overall payment, overall provision dealing with public utilities. If we're able to succeed there. There's some pipeline language dealing with biodiesel to make certain that the pipeline fixed in the bill does not include biodiesel. Bottom of page 3, there is a language that was omitted dealing with the Rochester sales tax issue. The words higher education were somehow dropped off of the potential uses. You get to page 4, lines 5 through 9 is local approval of the TIF district for Medtronic in New Brighton and Ramsey counties. And 10 through 12 adds a report to not only go to the chairs of the Ways and Means Committee, or chair of the tax committees, dealing with the report on compliance, but also the chairs of the State Government Finance Committee because they have appropriations jurisdiction over those committee. And page 4 and the rest of the amendment, I believe, is a provision that was inadvertently omitted dealing with blue waters. I thought it was in the bill, and Joe thought it was in the bill, and we found out it wasn't in the bill. So this puts it back in the bill. This is a provision that has passed the House on at least 3 other occasions. So it's mainly technical and this amendment is mainly technical and clarifying in nature, Mr. Chairman.
With discussion to the A18 amendment. Any discussion to the A18 amendment? Seeing no discussion, all in favor of the A18 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The A18 amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair, can I just ask a question?
Representative Solberg.
On the amendment, then, in Article 14, is that, since it was inadvertently left out of the bill, is it reflected in the spreadsheet?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Abrams.
Representative Solberg, very good question. There may be possibly a $25,000 cost in fiscal year 07. We are still working with the department because there may be a very slight PTR cost. And as I mentioned to the staff, I only bring bills to the floor that are fiscally balanced, and what will occur between now and the floor is that we continue to get more information from the department, and we will have the absolute latest information in a spreadsheet for members, and if there's a correcting amendment needed on the floor, I will certainly make it, Representative Silver. Yes,
thank you.
Are there any other amendments?
Mr. Chairman, if I could just briefly describe the bill. I was given a negative target. The negative target has been reached. There's about $16,000 on the bottom line this biennium, and I don't believe a whole lot on the bottom line in the out biennium, even though we don't, as Ways and Means or as a House, control the out biennium. I felt an obligation not to have a bill with large financial obligations in the out biennium. Some of the highlights of the bill on a fiscal basis, I have a spreadsheet to talk about rather than the bill itself. We do the governor's military pay subtraction for in-state active duty National Guard, but we also add a subtraction for active duty military serving out of state so that everybody is treated equally. There's an update to military pay provisions, which we must do. There is a conforming language to federal law on health savings account. The subtraction for the organ living organ donor bill is in the bill. We have two provisions dealing with the alternative minimum tax. One is a phase out of the charitable contribution caused by the Chapman decision to phase out the 1% floor for purposes of calculating the alternative minimum tax. We're also raising the exemption on the AMT over 3 years. Takes roughly half the people who would file an AMT return under $100,000 of income off the AMT when fully implemented. The education credit, there is a provision that Representative Knobloch had to share the expenses between eligible kids. I'm also very sympathetic to the idea of blowing the family cap if we had the money, because I believe a child is a child. The 80s add-back is kind of an interesting story, but I won't waste people's time with it. The single sales apportionment is the governor's proposal with a couple tweaks, I believe, but nothing substantial there. There was a provision dealing with leases to government and nonprofit organizations that is of great concern in Congress, and I think that that provision has bipartisan support in Congress. We get to take the money now. Probably one of the more controversial provisions that has passed the Senate, prior to the upfront payment of sales tax on vehicle leases, it has been modified somewhat in order to deal with legitimate concerns that have come forward. The governor's proposal dealing with the incidence of the sales tax on cigarettes, the pipeline to exclude natural gas pipelines, and to require remote sellers to collect Minnesota sales tax if they do business in Minnesota. There's a provision dealing with equity of 800 megahertz outside the metropolitan area, within the metropolitan area. There's an extension of the prepared meats exemption because of streamline. Representative Olson's provision dealing with PRT and a sales tax exemption for construction materials, equipment, and supplies is in the bill. The biotech initiative for $1 million is in the bill. Representative Mahoney's provision dealing with Job Z and retail businesses is in the bill. The International Economic Development Zone for the air freight operation has been included, as has the compliance initiative and the phase out or phase down or the elimination of a Supreme Court decision that came down on June 13th of last year. Dealing with stop-loss policies to make sure that they have to pay the premium. The court was interpreting a 1907 law, believe it or not. There's a phase down to 1.5% of the life insurance premium tax, which will help employment with life insurance companies. There's an act of the franchise fee on card clubs at racetracks. I believe we're the only card club in the nation that doesn't pay some sort of fee of some sort, and Representative Rukavina was really enthusiastic about the provision yesterday in taxes. There's a couple of estate tax provisions. One deals with the Q-tip election to allow that to be different from state and federal, but you will still collect the tax at some point. And then we have a forecast adjustment because they didn't build in for circularity. That, members, as well as an appropriation for the compliance initiative referenced earlier, additional dollars to the department for FOC compliance, and an update or a study of PTR and an update to the VOS database. Those are the major items of the bill. I must also say that also in this bill are a couple provisions important to this committee. First, deals with the Racino. We have leveled the payments in the Racino rather than have an upfront payment and then lower payments for 2 years and back up. All it does is just regularize the payments according to the guidance I received from Representative Knobloch, so the tax remains constant. The other is a bill from Representative Knobloch, Representative Segrin, Representative Solberg, and Representative Carlson, putting as a priority to repay the property tax recognition shift and the other shifts in the education area back up to 90% as a priority in any surplus dollars. It also takes the governor's initiative. I get the authority to carry this, the governor's initiative, on the $350 million budget reserve to cash flow with zero impact on the budget. I believe, Mr. Chairman and members, those are the highlights of the bill. I'll be very happy to answer questions.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Abrams, I know that you're aware that I had amendments to take out the PRT language in the bill in tax committee and then withdrew that so that Representative Quisley and Representative Olson and I could talk about it. Representative Olson is in the room, and we have not done that. Representative Olson and I have met, but we haven't been able, I think the three of us haven't been able to find 10 minutes together. But would you be having a author's amendment on the floor then to deal with that if we can work that out, or did you want to try to get it done yet here?
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Abrams.
There will be an author's amendment on the floor. There always is to large bills like this one. So if peace were be able to reach between you and Representative Quisley and Representative Olson, I'd be happy to include all of those items in the bill. There's one other issue I forgot to mention, and that was the language that came very late from Representative Latz dealing with the requirement for tax preparers to highlight the chickadee checkoff. While the department is okay, the CPAs may not be, and the small tax preparers may not be, simply because of their software and their advice. If I can get clearance on that language from those affected groups, we didn't have an opportunity to hear a bill on it. It was an idea that Representative Latz came forward with on Monday. If I can get some sort of clearance, understanding with affected groups, I would include that in the author's amendment. It just isn't ready to go today.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Abrams, and I appreciate that. I know it was Representative Pugh, I think, brought that to the committee for Representative Latz, and I know they'd be appreciative if you can get that in. But I know we talked this morning again about trying to solve the Fairmont problem for Representative Gunther, and was your intent to deal with the issue that Mr. Michael worked on in the public finance bill, or was it going to be included here in this bill as part of the TIF provision?
Representative Abrams.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lincheski, I believe it is going to be part of the public finance bill tomorrow, Representative Lincheski. Is the abatement language in the tax bill also, Representative Mr. Michael? Representative Michael.
No.
Oh, because the abatement language isn't in the tax bill. We were going to deal with the abatement language in the public finance bill, and I think that with a small little tweak, we're able to solve the Fairmont issue.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lincheski.
Just one last question for Chairman Abrams and just for the committee to hear his response. One of the things that's happened in tax committee all week, there are some of us who serve on tax committee are in the room, but daily we talk about gambling. And many of us have pressured the chair, and he's been bipartisanly agreeable to those of us who sit on the tax committee who have tried to not have the tax bill become the omnibus gambling bill. And I wonder if the chair could sort of cover all the concerns that keep coming up in the tax committee related to the fact that there is a Racino provision in the bill and there is a card club provision in the bill, and and sort of when we get to the floor, how those amendments that are related to gaming will be treated, at least by the author on the floor.
I'm going to oppose all amendments dealing with gaming to this bill. This is a tax bill. It's not a gaming bill. Let me be more specific. There are two provisions, one for the Racino, and nobody knew where to put it as to equalizing the taxes. I didn't think that that would be a controversial provision. I didn't view that as an expansion of gambling. I viewed it simply as a fiscal issue in the tax area. The other issue deals with the franchise tax on the Card Club at Canterbury. As members may recall who were here when the Card Club passed, it was an amendment on the House floor offered by Representative Oscop, I believe, and there was no franchise fee or any other obligation in that amendment, and it passed on the House floor. Let me be clear. I am sympathetic to a number of gaming issues that are pending before the legislature. I also have zero interest in carrying an omnibus gaming bill. So I will be resisting amendments ferociously. I will be asking the Speaker on a variety of points of order to find such expansions non-germane. I don't know how anxious he is to rule on them. He does not look anxious looking at them right now. He looks rather non-committal. But I point out that the chair of the tax committee asks for rules 1.22 of the bill, and it's the chair of the tax committee who asks or who's the chief author of the bill. And I would really view turning this into an omnibus scheming bill to be a very unfriendly act. It's a tax bill. For better or for worse, it's a tax bill. If members have gaming provisions that are in the tax committee, we will hear them. Absolutely. And I will probably even move them and speak in favor of them. I don't know where the other 27 members of the tax committee are.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, to jump to another subject I'm looking at, actually I think the bill that you authored dealing with the allocation of the tax credit for K-12, and so the question is of either of you, but when I look at the printout here, it shows a negative number. And when we've expanded, in a sense, the credit, we're allowing people to allocate it so they would get the greater amount. How do we end up with negative numbers? Question.
Representative Abrams.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, the way that the spreadsheet is put together for tax committee purposes, and this is a decision by Dr. Wilson and Ms. Zimmerman, negatives are decreases in taxes. Positive are increases in revenues. So if it's negative, it means it's going to cost $155,000 rather than bring in $155,000. So it may be the exact opposite of how it works in some appropriations.
Yeah, thank you. I was interpreting it the other way. So thank you.
Representative Rukavina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, Representative Abrams, the Racino tax itself, and you know, we've had the discussion about whether or not this bill would be germane to any type of gambling amendments, but how do you flatten out a tax that we don't yet know how it's going to even, we don't know, number one, if it's going to happen, but number two, gambling is an up and down thing, so how do you flatten out the Racino tax and feel comfortable with what you have in the bill?
Representative Rukavina,
Representative Abrams.
That provision basically came from Representative Knobloch. And let me take the first attempt to answer your question and then let Representative Knobloch. The Racino bill that passed last year had a higher tax rate for, I believe, years 1 and 2 of the Racino, and then a lower tax rate in years 3 and 4, and then went to a constant rate. What this bill does is it simply imposes a constant rate so that the decrease in years 3 and 4 wouldn't occur. Maybe to answer your question a little bit more, the revenue estimate for the Racino comes from the Department of Finance and the Department of Revenue using the best dollars they have. You may be right that the revenues is a different issue than the rate, and that the revenues may vary wildly given economic times and interest. But I believe that we're not making anything up here. If they made anything up, it was over at Finance and Revenue. I'm just using the fiscal information that was provided to me by Representative Knobloch and his staff.
And Representative Rukavina, if I can expand on that a little bit. When we passed the Racino bill last year, it had a provision that there would be a 55.5% tax for this biennium, a 31.5% tax for the next biennium, and after that a 40% tax. And basically, based on the revenue estimate that we received from the department, the idea was that this would, over time, equal out to be 40%. Well, when it was not enacted into law last year, if it had been enacted into law, we would have had roughly 18 months of Racino operations. Now, if it gets enacted into law this year, we'll have, say, around 6 months of Racino operations. Essentially, we're giving the Racino owners too good of a deal. We are not taxing them at 55.5% for the whole year and a half that was anticipated in this biennium. We'd only be doing it for 6 months. And then they'd be getting the benefit underneath the law that passed last year of the 31.5% tax rate for the whole next biennium before it evened out to the 40% number. So with the change that's in the bill, we're merely making sure that we get the money that was originally agreed upon now that the date has shifted.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
Is that Auntie Gloria?
I think it is, Mr. Chair, because she's extremely disappointed that Representative Murphy did not get her provision in this bill. But, you know, we can talk about that later. But so, Mr. Chair, then to you. So in this bill is a Racino tax that's been flattened out because the tax was in last year's bill at 55.5% and 31.5% and 40%, and you flattened it out then. So,
Representative Rukavina, we just adjusted it so that we are not giving the people who are involved in the ownership of Canterbury a better deal than was agreed upon.
Okay. So I guess my question to you, Mr. Chair, since you and I have gone around with fees and taxes, is a brand new tax that's being imposed in this bill a new tax, or isn't it a tax at all?
Well, Representative Rukavina, I don't consider this to be a new tax, no.
And could you give me your logic, Mr. Chair?
Well, Representative Rukavina, this is revenue from the Racino where people are voluntarily choosing to go and gamble if it comes about. The state is taking a portion of those gambling proceeds and the state is earning revenues from them.
So, Mr. Chair, if we were to impose a, let's say, a 10-cent a gallon gas tax and people voluntarily go to the pump to fill up their cars, is that a new tax or is it not a tax like you just said?
Well, I see Representative Quisley, the Chair of Transportation Finance, raising his hand, so I better recognize Representative Quisley.
Well, Mr. Chair, it's not the gas tax, but I don't think there's any tax now imposed on gambling, and this would be a new form of gambling, so it's like anything else that comes along when you're something new comes along. You figure out what the tax would be. And I'm not exactly sure, Mr. Chair, if there is any other gaming that we have taxes on other than maybe poll tabs and that, but this is a different form of gambling that we're starting out on.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
I don't know who to ask the question to on this one. Maybe perhaps it should be to the Chair of Taxes again, because if I could, Representative Abrams, the car rental lease, the acceleration of the tax on truck and car rentals, do you think a brand new tax like that is not a tax, or it's just because it's an acceleration, you don't consider it a new tax increase?
Representative Abrams.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, I'm probably the wrong scorekeeper around here for a lot of these items. But to answer your question, it's a question of the timing and incidence of the tax. And what it is an upfront requirement for the payment of the tax. Now, you asked the question, what if you drove the car for 6 months and then turned it in? I met with the auto dealers, and they want to know the whole list of people who are able to do it, because they just don't think that people are let out of leases all that often. So You know, is it an acceleration of a tax that's already owed? Probably yes. Is it a new tax? No. It's simply the time of incidence and collection.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
I don't know if I agree with you on that, but let's then talk about what's going on here, Mr. Chair, because you and I think, have a similar philosophy on, you know, what's happening here. You yourself said in tax committee when I believe it was acting commissioner or she full commissioner and all, Anguson, and Commissioner Salamone were there that the presentation by them that we were, you know, we had a structural imbalance. We were in deficit until, I believe, 2007. Now, accelerating that tax as an example on the car and truck leases merely brings money in to this biennium, but takes, I believe, is it $6-7 million a year then from the following years out. That's not going to help, but certainly you're as concerned as I am about the structural imbalance that we're looking at out in the out years out there. How, Mr. Chair, Representative Abrams, I'm speaking to my tax chair, how do you see us getting out of this without raising taxes and keeping the tax pledge that I don't think has been kept, but be that as may, we can split hairs about that. But how do you see us solving this structural imbalance without raising taxes?
Representative Abrams.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, as opposed to the Senate, what this bill does, and I don't know about the other bills, I'll let the other chairs of the finance committees answer that, is that we pay for anything that happens in the future within this bill. And I think we even go more because of the Racino, but net out the Racino for a moment. We have no net negative tails in this bill. We have a positive tail dealing with the Racino, but we didn't use the Racino money for, let's say, dealing with AMT or with single factor. There was a number of other items in the bill dealing with compliance initiatives, the stop-loss provision, the LILO-SILO provision, etc., that when taken as a whole, the net bill, net of Racino, is, I think, within $16,000 this biennium. We're under by $16,000, and I think we're under by a smidgen in the next biennium. So, you know, are we a lot better off because of this bill? No. Now, what happens in the out biennium, Representative Rukavina? I don't know. Currently we have about a $600 million plus budget reserve, and the negative tail was roughly the same $600 million. I think the chair of the Ways and Means Committee can talk a little bit more about the next biennium, but Representative Rukavina, like yourself, and I think most members of the legislature, I'm concerned about the state and being able to make sure that we are able to meet the commitments that are necessary in the out biennium, and hope to be here next year to work on that.
Well, Representative Rukavina, I don't have the spreadsheet for all the different committees in front of me because, like I said, I didn't know your question was going to come up today. But just to give you a sense for where we are, underneath current law, the out biennium had roughly a $440 million deficit. The governor's proposal had roughly a $340 million deficit. If you look at where the tails are for the bills that have been either passed by this committee, the bill that is before you, or what I anticipate is going to be happening for tails in the capital investment bill, and then you look at the additional money we put toward the reserve, we are at about a $240 million deficit for the out biennium. So we've roughly cut in half the current law budget for the out biennium. Would I like to see it zero? Yes, but we're making progress, and I am hopeful that as the economy continues to turn around, we will have some further surpluses in excess of what is projected, and that will help us with that problem. Representative Rukavina.
Well, Mr. Chair, and correct me if I'm wrong, let's take just as an example. I believe when I came down here in early February, I was buying gas for $1.39 a gallon. And last week, when I stopped at the local co-op store, it was $1.89 a gallon. That's a 50-cent increase, and it would be a 30 8% increase, is that what it is in price
again? Something like that.
Better, maybe. What we do now, today, in balancing the budget in Minnesota because of the change in the 2002 session, is we don't think that gas is ever going to go up, do we? Isn't that what we're saying? In as far as our inflation on spending, we're counting the fact because of the changes made in 2002 session, we're counting still that the economy may grow at a certain percentage, but that nothing else that costs us money in the state is going to go up. And to me, you know, it's not reality, because I go to the pump and gas pump and everybody in this room does, and that went up, and so everything's going up, and you know, I'm not getting any bigger, but you know, everything else is increasing in size and cost. So, you know, we're really not addressing reality here, I don't think, and it's not the fault of Representative Abrams. In fact, Representative Abrams, it's a bill that isn't that good, but it's not that bad either, I have to tell you that. You know,
I'm hoping that gas prices will go down back to $1.39 by this time next year.
Well,
but we'll have to see. Representative Abrams.
Well, you know, Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, we don't know what the future is going to hold. I think that we all hope, Representative Rukavina, that the economy continues to improve, that collections improve above forecast. You know, Representative Rukavina and Representative Anderson, Representative Soberg, I was watching Chairman Greenspan's remarks today to Congressional Committee, and one of his indicators as to what the shape of the economy is how things are on the Iron Range. And what Chairman Greenspan said is that all the mines are open, or at least most in years. And the other thing he said is that there is now a shortage of coke in order to be able to process.
That's illegal, isn't it, Mr. Chair?
It is not the soft drink nor the drug. It is used in the process, Representative Rukavina, in processing iron ore into steel. And he said that he never thought that he would be the chairman of the Federal Reserve and have a coke shortage that he had to deal with. So you do have people who are watching you at a very high level.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, I know that Representative Abrams, and I do have to tell you kind of a cute story since you brought it up. Yes. Mr. Greenspan has been actually very knowledgeable about the Iron Range for most of his entire career, because he worked for mining companies. So, and another interesting story, my local banker at the Queen City Federal Savings and Loan, Kevin Petrini, who I went to school since first grade with, and who is a good friend of Auntie Gloria's, by the way, just received his congratulations from Mr. Greenspan, because he served on the Federal Reserve Board, a banker from a savings and loan from Virginia, Minnesota, I believe, for either 3 or 6 years, my high school roommate. And so he told me that Mr. Greenspan was very, very knowledgeable about the Iron Range, and I sure wish that Governor Pawlenty hadn't booted Kevin off of the Giants Ridge Task Force, because he really has a lot of knowledge about economics.
I have Representative Wagenius, Solberg, and Carlson. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Abrams, I am looking at Article 6, Sections 11 and 12, because they have to do with the city of Minneapolis, and have to tell you that I was surprised to see those sections, because they weren't part of the Minneapolis agenda for this year. Mm-hmm. And as I understand it, may indeed conflict with some of the activities that have been going on recently in Minneapolis, and hope that given that you will be open to talking to some of the folks from Minneapolis about this, these particular sections.
Representative Abrams.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, the language came from Representative Mullery. I can only assume that when a member of the Minneapolis delegation brings language with the Neighborhood Revitalization Program, and I checked with Joel to make sure that there was nothing untoward actually being done for state tax policy, I can only assume that it is either non-controversial or it's been discussed with the Minneapolis delegation. I have caught wind that it has not. Let me assure you that I'm an agnostic as to this provision and put it into the bill solely as a courtesy to Representative Mullery.
Representative Wagenius?
I appreciate your agnosticism and would look forward to having some discussions with you and some other folks from the city of that.
Okay. That'd be fine.
Representative Solberger.
Mr. Chairman, one of the things we have to be a little cautious about as we look at how good of a job we're supposedly doing in the future is to keep a couple of things in mind with our forecast. Sure, we all hope that the economy improves and that people our jobs are created. I think in the March statistics, if I recall right, in Minnesota, there was 1,594 jobs created, net jobs. There were 1,564 new unemployment claims and a little over 3,000 new people seeking employment. So the economy for job-wise is hopefully will turn around. But in Minnesota, I'm real concerned about that. Keep in mind a couple of other things when we talk about the growth of the economy. You have to keep in mind that the February forecast is predicting, and I don't know exact figures for the second, third, and fourth quarters of 2004, but if I recall right, there's in the area of 4.8% real growth and 5.4% real growth. So in order for us to have additional revenues coming in for the state, if we're going to grow our way out of this problem, supposedly, we have to really be booming. And the indications are not quite that. One other thing I want to have you keep in mind as well, and that is the forecast is based on oil being at about $25 a barrel. And I think oil right now is probably 37?
35. Brent North Sea.
Oh, okay. But I think everybody is concerned about that. I mean, when we stop at the gas pump and you are putting more money in your car, obviously it's less money to do some of the other things that we pay sales tax on and so forth. So there are some hopeful signs out there, and quite frankly, none of us want to see the economy not improve a great deal. We want to get back to that positive. But I just caution you that the forecast of the dollar amount in February was based on some statistics that are kind of difficult to deal with. And if there's one thing that the economists have told us as we sit in on their meetings, that they have a great deal of concern about, and that's the lack of jobs.
Representative Abrams?
Chairman, I believe the forecast is based on 4.1 and 4.0, but I'll certainly,
well, Mr. Chairman,
relay on your... But more to your point, Representative Solberg, what I heard Chairman Greenspan say today is that the days of productivity growth cutting into job growth is about over, and that the productivity growth is going to level off or go down, and that now we're at a point in the economy where we ought to see job growth. Well, we've heard the same story for, a few months now. We had a good month in March. Let's hope we have a good April and May.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just one other thing I wanted you to keep in mind, that the 4.4 or 5.4 or whatever, 4.8 real growth is considered, it's lack of inflation. And so you achieve that real growth by job productivity. And if we're at the extent of the job productivity, we may see real growth not be that that great. So it's just... I mean, you can always take economists and you can you line them up in a straight line, they'd all point in a different direction. I understand that. But I want that to be on the record that there are some difficulties facing us.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, two areas. One, I was going to comment similarly to what Representative Solberg just did, in that, if you recall, our own state economist, Dr. Stinson, cautioned us on the out biennium, saying that optimistic projections were already built into the forecast. So I also happened to listen to at least some of the comments by Greenspan, and that was the first thing that came to mind was, well, Minnesota, but we already build some optimistic projections in. So the question, however, I had was unrelated to that. When we had the amendment up, you referenced the Rochester sales tax.
Yes.
And then you mentioned higher education. And my question is, what is that about? Is that for a specific project, or can they use it for virtually anything in higher education in the Rochester community?
Representative Abrams.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, there was some language clarification that was needed for the Rochester sales tax, and you have to go into the bill.
That was Section 20 if you're looking for it.
Yeah, but it's on...
or 15, I mean, excuse me.
It's on Article 4. It's on page 102. And you have to look at Subdivision 4. And the purpose of the, it says, construction of a regional recreation and sports center, and it had the word associated, that was changed to other, and then the word higher education facilities, which was to clarify that even further. So if you didn't have the words higher education in there, it may have been construed by somebody to be wider than what came out. Now, one of the reasons for the provision, Representative Carlson, is that City of Rochester can spend the money currently as long as it's spent on sports facilities. So I don't know exactly what they have in store there. Maybe Representative Queasley can help. But when Representative Nelson, Representative Queasley, and Representative Bradley came with that language change, I viewed it as clarifying rather than expansionary. So maybe Representative Queasley, Representative Bradley can help me out here a little bit.
Representative Queasley?
Well, Mr. Chair, the language that's presently in law did limit it to sports facilities, and that has been built. There's really no other need for that, and there's still some money sitting there that they wish to use for higher educational purposes. The present language won't allow for that, so this language will, what's in the bill says other facilities. It didn't specify higher ed facilities, even though it's implied. So there was some clarifying language that we put in now to clarify that it is strictly for higher educational purposes, that this language can be used for that and not for just any other thing that's in the bill. So.
Yeah, and
Representative Carlson.
Sharon, when you say, and of course you used to chair the Capital Investment Committee, I don't see Representative Krenke here, but when we say other higher education facilities, when those kinds of questions are before the Finance Committee that deals with higher education, then there are often follow-up questions in terms of other costs that may be incurred if you're expanding facilities, adding more floor space or whatever the situation might be, because it impacts on the operating budget. And I think at some point in the process it might be worthwhile knowing exactly what they have in mind and if there are going to be any other additional costs, and perhaps even hear from Minsky or Winona State University, which has a lot of the governance with the Rochester Center, in terms of what's in mind and what some additional costs might be beyond. As I read this, it sounds like they're going to be building some facilities there. And without having any idea what they might be, I'm just saying we should get some more information.
Representative Poisley.
Mr. Chair, this bill did travel separately and did go through higher ed, so the higher ed committee did see this portion of the bill. The facilities, or this money is probably going to be used as matching money for state money when it becomes available, where it's through the bonding bill or whatever in the future. It's, I don't think there's anything really planned at the present time to use this exclusively to build new buildings without Minsky or even the University of Minnesota's consent, because there'd have to be money from the state for that purpose, and so this would only be matching money.
Chairman, Representative Abrams.
Chairman Carlson, if you go a little further down, there's a limitation on the amount of money that can be raised through the sales tax that was enacted in 1998, $71.5 million. The story, as I heard it when I talked to some people in Rochester, is that, look, we can build another sports facility, is what they said, as long as the total amount spent does not exceed $71.5 million. Rather than force us to use it on a purpose we don't want, let us use it on a purpose that we do want, and that's where the first language came from. And then Representative Bradley and Representative Queasley and Representative Carla Nelson came to me today and said that we need a little language tweak in order to limit it again. So, you know, six one half dozen the other, but they're limited to $71.5 million.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm not saying whether this is good or bad. I'm just inquiring because it could. I don't think I missed any of the higher ed finance meetings. I now, as you comment, vaguely recall some discussion about Rochester, but I don't recall what that bill really was about or whether it was what it was authorizing. But just inquiring as the bill moves forward, if we can't perhaps get some. Additional information on what they have in mind and what the impact may or may not be on the operating budget.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think when the bill was presented, I believe just last Friday in Tax Committee, it was explained. In fact, from the very beginning, the community's purpose was never that it should be limited. That was a kind of a last-minute conference committee restriction that was placed. So it was really a kind of more bring it more back into the original intent. Now, as far as exactly, and there's only a little bit of money left. There's only a few more million dollars left. I mean, it would complement. One of the things, for example, is that there's a clinic that's part of a project that the community is going to be buying part of it because that provides some local help. Remainder of it, there's a community committee that's in charge of it. It has to also clear the city as far as any kind of projects. But you're not going to go out and build much in the way of buildings. This is just sort of some supplementary money to finish some other projects around on the campus in that area.
Representative Queasley?
He summed it up.
Okay. Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Abrams, Foreign Operating Corporation provision of the bill, the compliance initiative. I was thinking about that further, and I know that the compliance money set aside in the bill would in part, I think $800,000 was put for the commissioner to disallow transactions that the commissioner would deem that those foreign operating corporations that are just basically filing their taxes that way in an effort to get the tax reduction, or who don't have the substantial income that qualifies them for that. And I see in the bill there's a list of if they don't reflect market prices. You know, in thinking about that compliance money, I guess I had brought it up before, but I hadn't thought about it this way before. The $800,000 that's set aside for the commissioner to look between now and early next year to find those foreign operating corporations that might be using a tax loophole, you know, how will the commissioner do that? And was the money set for, is the $800,000 to go after the January 5th date, or is it for between now and January 5th? And it seems to me that most of the foreign operating corporations, they don't pay taxes until October. Isn't that right? And other than doing it in an investigative way, the commissioner would have to audit to ascertain. And I just wonder if giving the commissioner from October to January enough time to find any foreign operating corporations who may be abusing our current law is enough to really get the result you're looking for.
Representative Abrams.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lincheski, the money that is appropriated will be used to train people and bring people into up to speed in being able to deal with some of the audit and other enforcement issues that are needed in the short term. So that's why the money starts immediately. Secondly, you're right. If there are abuses, they will not be reflected until the 2003 returns are filed, and the last date after extensions for it to be filed will be October 15th, 2004. So I really don't know where some of the political repartee that I'm hearing from the other body is coming from, if it's coming from some sort of inside bowls at some companies or suppositions or whatever. You know, I've heard some of the same stories, I think, that others have about possible abuse. What the intent here is to bring a business purpose back and economic substance back to foreign operating corporations. Very easy to say, very difficult to write. Because if you start doing a size limitation, for the large ones, they're going to be relatively stable from year to year. Their incomes may be different, but at least the amount of sales, the amount of people they have overseas are going to be relatively stable from year to year. You start getting into some smaller startup companies or some small companies that are starting foreign operating companies and starting to export and do the things we want it to do. They're going to show wildly varying incomes for the first few years and sources of revenue, et cetera. So what we're trying to do here is we're trying to deal with an economic substance that's going to be very difficult to do. But I think that that's a better approach rather than throw out all FOCs, except if you're willing to bring your income tax statement forward to a conference committee and show the conferees that somehow you are not misusing the FOC provision. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to help the commissioner to have the enforcement tools necessary to enforce the law and buttress that by saying there has to be a business purpose behind this device.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Chairman Knobloch. And just as a follow-up, also in that provision, there's the 15% surtax, and I remember when we were working on the provision, there was also that in addition to the surtax, you could have penalties and fines, and you know, you could really get that number up there. But you know, the 15% surtax that the commissioner could put on these foreign operating companies, where did that number come from? Is that the sort of the general tool that the commissioner used, or why did you think that was the right number?
Representative Abrams.
Sir, Representative Lincheski, you're right. It is an arbitrary number. But this is a unique situation and a unique enforcement enforcement requirement. You can take out a corporate tax return for a subchapter C corporation, and you're not going to see a line that's going to say dividends received, foreign operating company, foreign payroll. You're not going to see those lines. The only way you're going to find out is if you actually take the return and audit it and go in and have them justify it. So because of a possible shell game that's being played, and I don't know how widespread it really is. Others think it's more widespread than I think it is. I think that net operating loss carry forwards and going to LLCs or sub-S's or partnerships or whatever from other subchapter C corporations, I think that that has a lot to explain to the revenue variations as much as FOCs. But if we have to go through the trouble of ferreting out any abuse, I think that there ought to be a specific penalty, because all we're asking for is that they create jobs, have a business purpose, and it's not being done solely as a tax dodge. And I think that that's a relatively easy threshold to meet for any business that's legitimately using a foreign operating corporation.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the time, and I know that probably a number of the Ways and Means Committee members aren't that interested, but members, you know, the media has been tracking this issue, and as we're all aware, has been talking about corporate profits being up and corporate receipts being down, and I think Representative Abrams is trying to get at that issue partially through this provision with foreign operating corporations and with compliance initiatives. But I do think that as the debate continues and as we get into, you know, the wee days of session, you know, I'm trying to highlight to people that I think that the issues Representative Abrams just raised, the possible lags and net operating losses combined with subchapter C's and how we're going to deal with these foreign operating corporations going forward, maybe that the net effect of them and getting the answer to the problem that's being covered in the media currently may not be resolved for some time. And I think that everybody bipartisanly needs to be really careful before they're pointing fingers at where all this is coming from, because I don't think anybody knows. And I think this is one way to try to take a look at that, but I'm convinced that this is something no one has figured out.
Representative Haas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Abrams, I know you have the money in here for health savings accounts, but I've kind of gone through the bill, and maybe I missed it, but I don't see any reference to Section 1201C of Public Law 108-173, which is the Medicare bill. Could you direct me to that?
Joel?
Mr. Michael.
I thought it was, Ms. Chair and Representative Abrams, I thought it was in Article 2, but I don't see any reference to those federal statutes in there.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Haas, there is a general update to all of the federal changes that have been made since April 12th, 10. If you look on page 44, lines 4 to 6, in essence, what that does is say that in defining net income for, in this case, both the corporate franchise and individual income tax, and the provisions that Congress has enacted through April 10th of 2004 are in effect, and that has the effect, in combination with the change on page 40, of picking up the Medicare changes. You'll note later on in the bill that there's one of those Medicare bill changes that is not allowed. So, for example, if you look on page 51, and that's the payments that are made to businesses that have retiree health plans that they keep in place. So, for example, that we're not conforming to, and there's an add back. But all of the other provisions, including the health care savings accounts that Congress has enacted through April 10th, we are picking up.
Let me answer
Representative Abrams.
That second issue directly on the add back, Representative Haas. We don't have to do that this year. The payments don't start until next year. And next year, the legislature can deal with that add back issue.
Representative Haas.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Michaels, the just by putting this language in, we just encompass all of federal law as it regards to all tax updates that the feds have passed to that date, then, correct?
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Haas, that's correct. I mean, otherwise we'd have literally, you know, hundreds of references to sections of federal acts that, you know, if you were doing it on a piece-by-piece basis.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, I think this, I'm glad we were able to put this in there, because this is going to mean quite a bit to the people of Minnesota, that they'll be able to both deduct their health savings account on a federal basis and also on a state basis. So this is a real positive change.
Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Abrams, see, we have several provisions that are talking about exemption of electrical generating plants from the property tax. And then I see on Section 13, you seem to have a general provision that the cities and or towns and counties agree that any new plant in the future would be exempt. How does all that fit together? Why do we have to have special sections for some communities that would be in a generalized provision, or am I misreading?
Representative Abrams.
Representative Knobloch, Representative Osmond. The reason for the provision is that every local provision for an exemption, and they're mainly gas burners and alternative fuel options, and that's the only ones that apply. Coal burner wouldn't make it. Every one of these that we have heard, at least during the 6 years I have been chair of the committee, has been granted. We had an overarching provision in 2001, and we didn't get it through conference committee. One of the labor unions was felt like they weren't told the truth about one of these facilities in 1999 or something like that, and we had to go back to, or we had to go to the individual approval. I think I speak for every member of the tax committee, where we are really, you know, we really like our colleagues, and we really like seeing them before the tax committee. But when it's basically 10 members saying the same story and you get this, and you get different county commissioners and different executives and different city council members coming forward and coming to St. Paul and asking for something that has been granted routinely for at least the last 4 or 5 years. The idea was is to include all the local provisions and then try again for the overall provision so that they won't have to come back next year. Because the fact is that there are going to be peakers and there's going to be mid-use energy efficient and environmentally sensitive generators that come forward just given where things are located. And maybe we can prevail on the Senate this time with the overall provision, Representative Osmond.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Osmond.
Representative Abrams, I really appreciate that explanation. That explains why you had both provisions in there. It was a duplication in my mind. That explains why. Also, on the Green Acre provision, Section 18, I see they're increasing the qualifications to in that area. And I would assume that's to try and bring it up to speed. I suspect that was a real bold numbers that we had there.
Representative Abrams. Mr. Chairman, Representative Osmond, the numbers hadn't been changed according to House research since 1967. We were careful with the numbers because we asked the Dakota County Assessor, as because that is kind of the mother load of green acres in the metropolitan area, what appropriate numbers would be. And we took the numbers that they said, and it may help a situation in the Moorhead area in which a leased farming area has been encompassed by development, and the city doesn't think that the nominal hay that's being baled on that land is generating anywhere near, you know, basically meeting the threshold of the 67 law, and that by updating the numbers to a more reasonable number, probably appropriate. There is absolutely no intent to undo Green Acres. It's simply to update numbers.
Chair, I thank you for that, because those are two statewide issues that I was concerned about. We'll talk about the pony park later.
You know, I want to carry a, Mr. Chairman, I want to carry a pony free bill someday.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going back to the discussion we had earlier about the projections, and I do have a question of Representative Abrams. There was a lot of publicity in recent days about the corporate tax and how profits are up and the tax revenue is dropping. At least a quick run through the bill, there doesn't seem to be anything in here that perhaps gives revenue some direction to get a handle on that problem, or maybe there's something in another bill that's going to do that, or perhaps you're going to have hearings, but I'd be interested in knowing what's down the road in terms of at least how we're approaching that lost revenue.
Representative Carlson, I think you may have been out for a moment when some of that was discussed, but Representative Abrams, would you like to address Representative Carlson's question?
Representative Carlson, Article 1, Section 11 deals with the FOC issue. It requires that it allows the Commission of Revenue the explicit power to disqualify an FOC because it has no substantial business purpose other than reduction of tax. It has a significant number of transactions that lack economic substance, and its income on a multi-year basis is predominantly from domestic operations and sources. Additionally, there's a 15% surtax resulting under orders under the authority, and there is also an $800,000 a year appropriation to the Department of Revenue in order to provide the additional enforcement. As I stated earlier, this is not an opaque item on the tax return. It is hidden away and requires auditors and frankly, on some things, we're going to have some economists take a look at the economic substance test. So, yes, we have looked at this issue. I've also mentioned that net operating losses may be contributing to the forecast error. Additionally, subchapter C corporations either becoming limited liability corporations or limited liability partnerships or sub-S corporations for a variety of reasons. That may be causing it, too. We really won't know until either late this year or early next year as to some of the sources, because we won't get the 2003 tax returns after extensions until October 15th, 2004.
Yeah, thank you. That must have been when I was out. I appreciate your revisiting it. I'll stop there then. Thanks.
Any other discussion to the bill? See no further discussion. Representative Abrams renews his motion that House File 2540, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The bill is passed. Members, before we adjourn, I want to recognize our page, Eric Anderson. Today is his last day, and Mr. Anderson, thank you very much for all your good service. And Eric's got a great business where he sells fleece pants through the Internet. So if anyone's interested in him, you can go get the Internet address. Members, we're tentatively looking at doing the capital investment bill here on Tuesday. With that, the meeting's adjourned.